Every once in a while you receive unsolicited feedback in life. It happened to me this week as I was getting my semi-permanent cast on. The nurse told me I was a bad relaxer. I would have thought after all these decades of living on the earth I'd become better at it, but apparently she informed me otherwise. In your Bible, I invite you to turn to the book of 1 Timothy, New Testament. Husband and wife have been living alone for some time because their kids had grown up and left the house, except for the cat that lives there. And the wife loved the cat. It was her favorite. The husband, on the other hand, did not love the cat, and was quite annoyed at the animal's movement all throughout his life. The wife's sister took ill and needed to go and be with her for several days, and so she asked her husband if he would please take care of the cat, to which he begrudgingly said yes, although he hated it deep inside. It didn't even take a day, and he was fed up with the cat, and so he picked it up, took it down to the dock, and put it on a ship that was headed out of town. The wife came back, and obviously, Kitty Kitty is nowhere to be found. And she's rather distraught, and she's looking everywhere, and they're searching, and he jumped in and said, well, let's find this cat. And he's given this impression, right, that he's fully invested in finding the cat. Where is the cat? And he could say, in all honesty, I have no idea where your cat is. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put an ad in the newspaper, and I will offer a reward of $5,000 for your cat. Oh, honey, thank you. It just means so much to me that you would love me that much that you would go to such great lengths. The ad went in the paper. Friend called him and said, I just saw your ad in the paper. $5,000 for a cat? You must be out of your mind. And he goes, if you knew what I knew, no payment is too much. If you knew what I knew about this text, no payment is too much. 1 Timothy is a great insight, a window into God's view of our resources. We've been looking at this the last several weeks together. The New Testament, the Old Testament, both give us quite a good insight into God's perspective on the things that we feel we possess. And Timothy is the last area that we will look at. He's a pastor of a church at Ephesus. Ephesus is really diametrically opposed to the ones we looked at last week in Macedonia. Philadelphia, Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea were very poor. Churches. Not so in Ephesus. Ephesus was like command central of that portion of Europe, and there were a lot of resources, abundant resources, and the people of the church were no less a part of that. But it had an influence in their spiritual journey, as we might understand. Chapter 6, 1 Timothy, let's read a few verses together, beginning of verse 6. But godliness actually is a means of great gain when it is accompanied by contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, and so we can take nothing out of it either. If we have food and covering with these, we shall be content, utterly satisfied. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. Some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Verse 17. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. To begin with, I think that in order to understand the right kind of rich, We need to grasp this idea of detachment. The right kind of rich has a healthy detachment. Godliness, he says, verse 6, is a means of great gain when it is accompanied by contentment. Paul said in Philippians, I've learned to be content no matter what my circumstances. I know what it is to live in plenty. I know what it is to live in want. I have learned the secret, he says, of being content. The secret. Do you know that? It is coming to this place of being utterly satisfied no matter what your circumstances. Utterly satisfied. I was growing up as a kid. I went to a youth retreat. It was a weekend retreat. And the guy that was sharing there talked about when he was a child that they didn't have any food in the house. They didn't have any money. And their father said, we're going to believe that what God is going to do is provide for us abundantly. And so they gathered around the empty table and prayed. And as they were praying, the doorbell rang. And they went to answer the door, and there are boxes of groceries. And I said, that's cool. I want that to happen to me. Be careful what you ask for. Fast forward some years later, I have two young children, and we're working in a ministry situation where literally we have no money. Church can't afford to pay us. We are living in a kind of a rundown parsonage because that's the only thing the church could afford. We don't have much food at all in the pantry. And God brought this back to memory. He said, remember when you said that as a 16-year-old boy? And I said, yeah. He goes, do you remember the cost that you needed to pay? No. To get to that point, God emptied everything. And what do you learn? To be satisfied. To be satisfied with nothing. Or to be satisfied with an abundance. Paul says, we know that there is a great gain to be found when we recognize that we're loosely attached to the things of this world. That it isn't the things of this world that bring contentment and satisfaction. It is this disposition, this state of mind that says, I am perfectly satisfied with wherever God has put me in this moment in time. Why detachment? Well, there's several reasons listed here, a couple others that I will point out for you. First of all, an unhealthy desire for financial wealth is really tantamount to succumbing to temptation. And that's what he says. This reality is, in later on in chapter 6, that those who want to get rich fall into a temptation. It's like a giant hole in the ground, a pit that's been covered up. And you're walking around and you have your eyes not fixed on the road ahead of you, but you have your eyes fixed on the gold pot at the end of the rainbow, so to speak, and you fall in. It's tantamount to succumbing to temptation. Proverbs 11:28 says that those who want to get rich literally fall down. They trip over even the slightest of things because they have their eyes focused in the wrong place. In fact, it says that those who want to fall into a temptation, it becomes a snare, and these foolish, harmful desires actually plunge people into ruin and destruction. The word for plunge is the sinking of a boat. Okay? Melody and I were watching a show yesterday. It was the greatest fishing disaster in Alaska in the last 50 years. And as they were doing the research, they found out that this boat filled up with water in 1 minute and 40 seconds. All 15 on board died. The boat sunk, right? And that's the picture that I get in my mind, is this inordinate desire for wealth. We leave the wrong doors open. That's literally what happened. They left the hatches open. And the 25-foot swells in the sea filled up that boat in no time. That's what happens. The things of life begin to fill in the void, and we sink. So that's the first thing that I would remind us of, is that this unhealthy desire for financial wealth is really tantamount to succumbing to sin. Second, inordinate love for financial wealth is toxic. He says here the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. Doesn't say the love of money is all sorts of evil. It can be. But it's the root of all other kinds of evil. Once you have this toxic root of this unhealthy desire for wealth, it begins to eat everything in your life. I read a story about a man who won the lottery. It was one of those mega lotteries. Had lots and lots of money. And basically just bathed his family in this overabundance of wealth. Now, at the end of about 5 years, his teenage granddaughter had become addicted to drugs and ended up dying of a drug overdose. All because of the money he threw at her. It became toxic. And it was a root for all kinds of evil in this man's life. To which he said, I wish I had never seen that money in the first place. It is the root, Paul says, of all kinds, all sorts, kinds of evils that are around in this world. It is, thirdly, uncontrolled love for financial wealth is detrimental to your spiritual health. He says that this love of money, some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. They have set aside the spiritual journey for the sake of possession. I remember Paul said at the very beginning, we're not going to take anything, we didn't bring anything in the world with us. You came with your birthday suit. And when you leave, they might bury you in a real suit, but you're still not taking anything with you. Okay, and that's what Paul is saying. But that toxic love of money then begins to infect their spiritual journey. And they forget that isn't the objective. That the true objective is a love of God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That love of God has been left behind, has been pushed aside. Mark 4:19 calls it deceitful. This idea of money will make me feel better is a lie. It is a lie, really, from the pit of hell. Because it is so toxic, it begins to take its toll on us spiritually. Wandered away from the faith. Pierced themselves with many griefs. You have this idea of really self-inflicted wounds. Self-inflicted wounds. Another one is that we find in verse 17 that the only certainty of wealth is that it is uncertain. The only certainty that is associated with wealth is that it's uncertain. This just asks some of those olders who understand what happened during the stock market crash of the 20s or the one that began in the 90s. When people lost millions and millions and millions of dollars overnight, what happened to their lives? The certainty of financial wealth is its uncertainty. Here today, gone tomorrow. One bad investment, it's over. Doesn't even have to be a bad investment. Mel and I looked at our investments over the last 3 years, and boy, it seems like there's a hole. There's a giant vacuum in our investment portfolio, and who knows where it's going. Uncertain. The certainty of wealth is its uncertainty. We're to live carefully, comfortably, detached from an obsessive desire for financial gain. Second, the right kind of rich is very generous. The right kind of rich is very generous. Now, I want you to see this truth before we move on to something else. Instruct those who are rich in this present age not to be conceited or fix our hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, look at this line, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Right? We're not to have an obsessive compulsion towards accumulating wealth, but nor are we to see it as evil in itself. That God has given us things to enjoy. So you drive a nice car, God gave that to you to enjoy. Living in a nice house, enjoying a vacation. These kinds of things God has just poured into our lives so that we may enjoy. But where is the fixation? Is the fixation on all those things now that become the joy, or is it the giver? Is it the gift, or is it the giver? Where is the source of that enjoyment? So the key focus, obviously, is on God, who richly supplies us with those things to be enjoyed. It uses these words of doing what is good, verse 18, doing what is good, being rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. Literally, to be ready at any moment to impart something for another's benefit. The idea, again, of holding on loosely. If God so drives you in this direction, there's somebody that has a need. There it is. It's interesting that the word love of money is actually, it's a phrase in English, but in the Greek it's only one word. And it's that word phileo, friendship. It's the kind of thing that says, what you value, I value. Where you go, I will go. What you find important, I find important. And so, really, when you have it's really a love of silver, is what the word is. Love of silver. That the shiny, gleamy things become consuming, and that it becomes the only world that you see. So he says, instead of that, be generous, share well, give more than what is normally required. Somebody once said, if there be any truer measure of a person, that by what they do, it must be by what they give. Somebody once told me that they could tell most of my life what it looks like by looking at my checkbook. Well, maybe a lot of you don't write checks anymore, so you'd have to look at your online account. Right? To get a very good, clear snapshot of our lives if they just saw our spending habits. Where does the money go? To whom is it affecting? Whom is it benefiting? Generosity is a clear indication that our attitude is right toward material things. And maybe most important of all, the right kind of rich is interested in eternal treasure. Have a long view in mind. And it's at this point that I believe Paul is reflecting on something that Jesus once said. Let me read it for you. Matthew 6, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there is where your heart is. The phrase is fascinating. Do not store literally means to stop. Stop an action that's already in progress. So the assumption is that they've been spending an inordinate amount of time backfilling their lives with financial resources, right? To the point where they're weighted down. You can only carry so many gold bars in your backpack before you can't carry that anymore, right? It's a heavy load. It's a heavy load physically, it's a heavy load emotionally. So stop storing up those kinds of things, Jesus said. But instead, the command is to store, to look up, look ahead. There are things that have eternal value that should be of great concern to you. Sometimes it's fairly easy to demarcate, and you look at things that are shiny, glistening, those kinds of things that you hold in your hand. Those valuables that you have to put in a safe, those kinds of things you can look at and say, you know, that might be treasure on earth. The treasure in heaven might be invisible. It might be the investment in a life that you're making. You may not see the dividends of that for years, if ever. It might be that there are occasions where you've invested in somebody's life and their life has been turned around because of your investment. Store up for yourself treasures in heaven, Jesus said, because it's there that things are in safekeeping, amass them, stockpile them, if you will. Just keep throwing those treasures of heaven in and in and in. After a while, you have this giant, like those grain heaps at the elevator, right? That's a stockpile of stuff that you have set aside for the future. God will take care of those. The rich are to take from their own plenty, and by devoting it to the service of God and the relief of the poor, is actually storing up what is good. They store up for themselves, verse 19, the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so they may take hold of what is life indeed. I like that phrase. What is really true life is spiritual to the core. What is truly, truly life has its foundation set in heaven. So take hold of that. Grasp a hold of what life really is. Not people have been following all that's happened during the Russia-Ukrainian war and how many of the oligarchs from Russia are trying to hide their $300 million yachts, right? They're trying to put them, everyone, they're trying to hold on tightly. It's fascinating to me how many of them have perished under mysterious circumstances. But the reality is, they're not doing anything with that opulence. It's really done quite the opposite. It's taken their lives. So they thought they had the tiger by the tail, right? They had life under control. They had life at the command of their hand. And it wasn't life at all. Paul said, take hold of what really is life. Take hold of that which is rich for eternity. That which pays great value for all time. Our primary focus must always be on things that last. On things that last. Eternal. What's your attitude towards financial prosperity? Where's your focus? Are you focused on the gift or the giver? Does your money control you, or do you control it? And how generous are you? Where is your heart today? Help fix your hope on the uncertainty of what the world has to give. Hope, confidence, the certainty. That's what hope is about. It's the certainty that what God has said will be true. The promises that He has made, He fulfills. Fix your hope, he says. It's like a staring contest. Fix your hope on those eternal values. The writer of Hebrews was clear and said, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. A lifestyle that fixes eyes on Christ will be a truly rich life to be. Father, thank you for taking us through the journey of some things in the Old Testament and New Testament to understand what your perspective is on the gifts that you have entrusted to us, the things that you have allowed us not only to have management over, but also to enjoy. You certainly have given to us above and beyond what we could have asked or imagined. But the reality is there's no self-made man, no self-made woman in our midst today. It is all because of what you have done. So pray that you would so move us in the depths of our soul that we may begin to see what life really is, this perspective of fixing our eyes on you and holding on to the things this world loosely and to pursue that which is eternal. Silver and gold is not eternal. My neighbor's soul eternal. Help us to gain your perspective on what is truly valuable, that we might participate with you in what you're doing in our community in this valley. For the sake of your kingdom, in Jesus we pray. Amen.